This podcast is supported by Progressive, a leader in RV insurance. RVs are for sharing adventures with family, friends, and even your pets. So if you bring your cats and dogs along for the ride, you'll want Progressive RV insurance. They protect your cats and dogs like family by offering up to $1,000 in optional coverage for vet bills in case of an RV accident, making it a great companion for the responsible pet owner who loves to travel. See Progressive's other benefits and more when you quote RV insurance at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet injury is an additional coverage and subject to policy terms.
My guest today is Russ Freshtek. He's here to talk about his review of Homefront: The Revolution. My name is Justin McElroy, and you're listening to Polygon's Quality Control.
Can I talk now?
No. Russ, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I don't think I've ever done a quality control before, so...
Clearly, because you talked all over my music. That's the part where I leave silence to remind me to put music in, and you just chatted right through.
Okay.
Russ, imagine this. A game is released, and then all of a sudden it kind of disappears, and nobody really cares that much because they didn't like it all that much to begin with. And then out of nowhere, it just like comes back and nobody's really sure why. And everyone else is sort of like, eh, fine. Was that creepy, like deja vu for you after that? Like, was that weird to be going through that again?
It is. I feel like people were a little more into the original Homefront, like before it came out, like a little more intrigued that it might be okay. And then it came out and was like absolute poopy pants.
See, I was saying because you left Polygon and there, you know, do you get it? And then you came back and everybody's like, fine.
I see what you're like doing. Wow. How was that the last hour of you researching just to set that up?
Just been setting it. No, it came to me. That's the scary part. This stuff just appears.
You're scary.
Okay. So like I thought Homefront was so bad and boring.
Terrible.
And it like really boring and like who gives a crap?
Yes.
What was sort of like your reaction when you heard that they were coming back to this, and like what sort of mindset, I guess, were you going into this with?
I mean, for games in general, I do try to keep an open mind, especially games that I'm reviewing. So I try not to like bring too much into it. That being said, like it's generally not a good sign if like the publisher that's making the game sort of forgets that the game is coming out 3 months before the game actually releases, which was the case here. So like,
how do you mean?
In the sense that, like, there weren't any real events going on. There wasn't, like, preview builds going out. It was, like, total radio silence, which usually means that the publisher is sort of just sending it out to die. I will admit that I was not super encouraged by that. But, like, I've been wrong. Like, Doom is a game that I really enjoy, and they went pretty dark, too. So I've certainly been wrong in the past. But in this case, it was very quiet. No one was really excited about it, like outside, like gamers were not, you know, dying to play the new Homefront again because the first one was so bad. And so there just wasn't a lot of enthusiasm around it. And I was kind of hoping like, hey, Dark Horse game comes out of nowhere and like surprises a lot of people. That's not really what happened.
I talk to people a lot on this show about the moment when the preconceptions you had about the game sort of fall away and your impression of it sort of crystallizes. Do you remember a moment with Homefront where you sort of realize like, oh, okay, I see what's happening here?
So there's a moment in the first like 5 minutes that I was actually a little bit encouraged. It was a cutscene, non-interactive, I couldn't control it, but you're being like wrestled to the floor by a soldier and your response as you're like reaching for your gun is to throw a phone in his face, like a cell phone. And it just sort of like bounces off harmlessly. And I was like, oh, maybe this is going to be like a fun, silly take on the like Red Dawn taking back America thing. That never, ever, nothing like that ever happened again. Basically, the second that I was introduced to a character and he was like, we have to fight for the people and what they believe in and the importance of freedom. I was like, oh, this is bad news bears.
Yeah,
it was it just starts in like a generic place and only like just wallows in this. Hey, we're going to really not reach for the stars. We're just going to reach for the gutter in the sense of like not trying to do anything spectacular, like the most check the box, mediocre experience they could deliver.
Do you feel like this should be it for Homefront? Do you feel like,
yes,
all right, you guys
God.
Have had two shots at this? Because I wonder if there's something inherently flawed about, and tell me if I'm off base here, but it seems like something like this is such a politically and sort of like culturally charged idea, this idea that America has fallen and another nation is like occupied.
Yeah.
It's such a charged idea that it seems like it will never be, it will almost never make sense for a big AAA game to be as sort of like brave with that idea as it would need to sell it.
I don't think that's I don't think that's the issue with this game. Like, what's holding it back is not the premise and the like political nature of having North Korea invade the United States. It's strictly a design and writing issue, which is to say they're just not trying. The subject matter itself, I think, has potential. We've seen a few games do it in the past, which is the one that jumps to mind is I think Modern Warfare 2 was essentially the same idea, where like Russia invades the US.
Right.
And I think it's less the political implications of it and more sort of the dull nature of having a shooter set in American cities. I don't know. They tend to be, for me, like, I didn't particularly like that Modern Warfare game. And I think part of it is just because, like, a lot of American cities look very samey and there's nothing sort of adventurous or spectacular about it unless you
feel
like
maybe
alternate...
because you do live in an American city, though?
Sorry?
Do you feel maybe that's partially because you do live in an American city?
Maybe, but it's also because I think American cities inspire shooters in general when it comes to like coming up with generic locations, like here's a warehouse and here's a city street. They don't look generally European or Asian or whatever. They look like, hey, here's a generic American street.
Right. Even if they're not literally in New York, many of them are sort of basically kind of in New York.
Right. Now, I think you can make interesting stories, obviously, set in America, but by hinging it on we're going to take back America, you sort of need to, I think you need to go like either obviously alternate history, but you need to go like really bombastic and almost silly with it, where, you know, you're having fun, almost like the spirit of like, what was the zombie fighting game on the Xbox One, with the drink and everyone turns into zombies and it's like a silly.
Dead Rising?
No. I don't remember it.
Oh, Sunset Overdrive?
Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah.
You almost need to go that route for it to be just as like a change of pace, because the dour, like super depressing nature of like a revolution set in America is just like, it's overbearing. You look at the comparison, look at Far Cry. Far Cry has made their bones on revolution being like the tent pole. But there's a reason that they're so exciting, is because you're in like the Alps or you're in some crazy location you've never been in and you want to like explore it. Do I want to explore Philadelphia? Sorry, Chris Grant, I really don't.
So I've got some questions from listeners here. I want to hit you with a few of them. Let's see. A lot of requests for the besties to return. That's never happening. Dan asks, is it so linear / on rails that it dictates the order of who can climb a ladder like the first game? How linear are we? I know it is technically an open world game, as you said, but like, how linear are we talking here?
It's linear in the sense that there are story missions that you go, you know, send you from point A to point B, but the maps are open. Like, it's a set across probably like six quote open world maps. It's not like one big seamless map like Far Cry. It's these sort of hub areas, and within those there are like mini side missions where you have to like kill the guys in this base to clear it out or hack this device to like open up your radar. So I guess that's nonlinear in that sense. Obviously doing the story missions is pretty linear. There is backtracking if you want to do that, but like for me, like there was never an incentive to go back and do stuff because it was such a slog. And also like currency wise, the stuff you're earning, you have tons of it by the end of the game. So there's no point.
David asks, he said Austin Walker from Giant Bomb said he was actively rooting against the protagonist by the end of the game. Was that your experience?
No, I just didn't care. Like, it was not a hatred of the protagonist. It was just an, like, first of all, he doesn't talk. So the protagonist essentially has no character. So there's nothing really to root against. But secondly, like, everyone that you're interacting with is just, like, so bland and generic that there's no way you can develop an emotion for, like, some of them die throughout the course of the game. I just didn't care. Someone ends up with a giant spike through their chest and slowly dying and, like, begging for mercy. And I'm like, when's this cutscene going to end? It's brutal.
Control-wise, like, just for the moment-to-moment action, is there a good parallel you can draw with it, what it feels like the most?
I mean, it feels like Far Cry a lot. Like, there's stuff like the close-range takedowns where you can just, like, click in the stick and, you know, kill someone with a melee attack. I played on PC, but I was playing with a controller for what it's worth. And the controls, again, feel similar to Far Cry, but it's so much less ambitious in terms of what you can do. Like, for example, there's only one vehicle in the game. It's a motorcycle. It's the only vehicle that you can control. And you compare that to Far Cry's jeeps, motorcycles, helicopters, elephants, and you begin to see just like how much they just weren't trying in comparison.
Do any of the story beats actually like land? Like, did you have moments where it got through to you, or was it just, were you just completely cut off?
There's a moment very early on where you're introduced to this woman. I believe her name is Dana. And there's a scene where you're like, she's talking to you in like a very threatening manner and has a knife, and it's like very up close in your face. And the graphics are not bad. So she looks like good and impressive, and she's sort of selling the delivery, and it made me think, hey, like, there's going to be like emotion behind these characters, almost akin to like that first villain in Far Cry 3 that's like very memorable and then dies halfway through. And she, for whatever reason, they like did that once, and then essentially throughout the whole rest of the game, it's just like you never see anything like that again. So that might allude to the fact that it had so many different studios working on it over the course of its lifetime. But it just, there was a sense that like things were going to work. And I was like, oh, I'm like a little bit scared of this woman. She's like weird and creepy. And then everyone else is just like the most generic. And even she, who appears later on, does not do anything spectacular. So story-wise, it just, there's like lame twists where it's like, oh, this guy who you suspected was going to betray you ends up betraying you. Like, that's what we're dealing with.
Can you talk to me a little bit about co-op?
Yeah.
In the game, how that's handled.
So there's a totally separate mode called Resistance Mode, I believe. And it's set across some of the larger maps that are in the main campaign. So you're going to similar locations. And in those larger maps, you're given objectives like, you know, kill all these guys or hack this thing or chase down a truck. And it's sort of progressive, so you'll do one objective, and then it'll send you to the next objective all in the same game. And you can play that with up to four people. What's weird and kind of started off interesting about it is that there's character progression in there that doesn't really match the character progression in the campaign. You pick, like, a job, I guess it is, and there's a list of, like, 20 jobs, one of them being video game designer, which I believe I picked, but... So, and that sort of determines your starting weapon and a starting perk. And then the more you play the co-op, you're unlocking different perks that increase like revive speed and stuff like that. And you can unlock visual customizations to your character. Even though the whole game is in first person, there's really no time you would ever see it, except for maybe at the end or beginning of a map. And so it was like, I was impressed and a little bit surprised that they put that much work into it. And then in playing it, like, it's the same generic gameplay that we've been playing. It's the same, like, there's tons of, like, first-person platforming that's just miserable. And what's crazy about that mode is that they also have baked in the idea of, like, a supply box, which is becoming more and more common in games these days, which is you can spend 300 in-game coins to get a chance at a vanity item or whatever, weapon attachment, something like that. So... they built it in such a way that like they're kind of assuming that people are going to like want to spend in-app money. I don't know for sure. I was on an earlier build, so I don't know for sure that they're actually going to charge for in stuff. But they built it for a long tail. Like, people are going to play this for 20 or 30 hours to unlock everything. And I played it for 3 hours and was like, I can never see this mode again. It's just like the dullest. It's just the campaign with another person suffering with you instead of just being alone. So,
excuse me. The commenters on the review had a few more questions.
Okay.
Mainly about the score, and I wanted to see how much sort of impact or input you had on the way we do scores is a little different at Polygon. If you don't know, we've talked about it before, but the score is something that's arrived at by the site, not just the person like writing it. We have a rubric if you ever want to go check it out and see what a number means. But I did think it was interesting. We gave this a 6 out of 10. And it felt like reading it, it's hard to see. 6 for us is like a pretty decent score. How do you justify or not justify, but like, how much can you recommend a game that isn't fundamentally bad, but doesn't do almost anything interesting?
Yeah. I mean, it was a struggle. And as you said, like, it wasn't me coming up with the score. It was, you know, I know the rest of the team sort of reads the copy and then determines the score based on that. This is sort of where scores get really tricky, because as you said, it's not a fundamentally broken game. It's not buggy. I played it for many hours and you know, it wasn't crashing or anything like that. So, you know, you can't, in my brain, I sort of think like below 5 is a broken game. You know, you're getting into like broken territory. Like, the game doesn't work, or the game is just like a misery to play from minute to minute, in the sense that like the controls are bad or sluggish or whatever. This game, obviously, I mean, it's the epitome of mediocrity. So, you know, I know certainly Arthur mentioned to me like what I thought. And he's, you know, in reading the copy, he thought it was a 6. And I said, yeah, I'd be fine with that, or a 5.5. But like, for me, I know people obsess about scores and stuff like that. The difference between a 6 and a 5 for me is kind of splitting hairs.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, it's pretty clear that like, if you read the review, you would never want to play this game. Phil asked me the other day, Phil Kohler asked me the other day, you know, if I didn't have to pay for it and I just wanted to like try it out, is it worth just trying out? And I told him no, because it's just, it's a, you know, like, hug your child.
Read a book.
There's just there's nothing gained. You don't learn anything from playing this game. It doesn't advance the medium in any way. It's just checking all the boxes, which is depressing. It's a shame. I will say, in its defense, it does do one thing surprising and amazing, and it's an Easter egg that's in the last 20% of the game that, I guess, spoilers if you really care, but you can play 2 levels from Time Splitters 2.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. That's probably the most fun part of the game.
I think you're probably right about that.
Last question, and despite what your Homefront co-op bio may say, you are not a video game developer, nor am I, nor any of us. So a question like this is always a little awkward, and it's always verging on, you know, prognostication.
But sure.
Your feeling when you played this and after you were finished, does this feel like game that was like sort of flawed from the jump, flawed in design, or flawed on execution, just didn't sort of execute on ideas very well?
I remember seeing it like 3 years ago at E3, maybe 2 years ago at E3. And what they showed was sort of an interesting idea, which was, you know, using a lot of mechanics and using like the recon elements of Far Cry to stealthily take out this invading force in an American city, like as a core idea, has the potential to maybe be good. But I think, again, as I said, like, I know that there were multiple studios that worked on this throughout the course of like THQ going under and Crytek buying it, and then Crytek giving it to another studio. You just get the sense that there was no one at the helm of this game that cared enough to make it anything more than a, we've spent X number of dollars already and this needs to come out, so how do we do it in the least risky way possible.
Sure.
So, who's to say how things were going internally, but it's hard to imagine, like, as I was playing this, I could just think of like the numerous people that worked on this game, and it just kind of made me depressed because, as I said, it's a fine game. Like technically, like it doesn't crash. It's crafted in such a way that it's fine, but there's no passion behind it. There's no reason for it to exist. And the idea of working on something for many years that just has no hook to it or no engagement just depresses me to no end. So, I feel bad kind of ripping into it, but I also feel bad for all the people that worked on it and probably feel similarly to the way I do. Can't express it, but it's a...
I personally feel bad for people that get suckered into buying it. That's what I think.
Yeah, no, I feel
I'm
bad
on the side of the consumers.
Yeah.
Russ, the true gamers.
I feel bad for them as well, but you know what? We've given them the tools to know
the tools answer. To themselves. folks, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much, Russ, for joining me. We got a lot more on the site, including this review. If you want to go read it at polygon.com, there's a lot more waiting for you there. But until the next time we have a game to talk about, my name is Justin McElroy for Russ Freshtick. Thank you for listening to Polygon's Quality Control.